I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Annie Hepp from Texas Parks and Wildlife. Annie talks about what pulled her all the way from Vancouver, British Columbia, here to Waco, and some of the amazing nature spots that are surrounding us in the heart of Texas. But first, it's the word on the street. If you have a big idea for a business but need a little push to get it over the edge, the stars have aligned. Startup Waco is partnered with Extraco Banks for the Big Idea Challenge, a business plan competition that culminates with a Shark Tank-style community event on April 25th.
What we're looking for is just a business idea that's for a profit or a nonprofit that's in the idea to the pre-revenue stage.
That's Carol Ferguson of Startup Waco.
And this could be for individuals or teams. There's no max on the teams. Anyone in the McLennan County area is eligible to sign up.
Baylor's Dr. Jeremy Vickers will be hosting a free lunch and learn ideation session this Monday.
He's going to be leading a session on how to pitch your idea, feasibility, and some strategies.
Ideas are due by March 22nd. At the April event, the best pitch walks away with $5,000 and second place with $2,500.
This is just a free opportunity for anybody in the entrepreneurial world, the small business world, or let's say you have a full-time job and you just have a great idea to try their hand at submitting that idea and receiving some revenue to get started.
Top finishers are also awarded mentorship and office space from Startup Waco.
That's really exciting to have a place to work and have that access to mentoring that's right here in our space and obviously all the resources that we have here.
Find more information about the Big Idea Challenge at startupwaco.com. I'm now joined in studio by our commercial real estate expert, Greg Gleim. He's here for the monthly segment, What's Happening Here?, where he tells us what's going on in the commercial real estate world. Greg, there's been some recent restaurant news. What's happening?
Yeah, I think that it got out in the newspaper this weekend that Guest Family Barbecue is going to be moving locations. They were going in on Columbus Avenue, and they're now going into the formerly Minkna's restaurant on Franklin. So it opens up a fantastic 7,000 feet on Columbus and 6th. There's additional space over there, about 1,700 feet, that we're bringing to market as well. So I'm working with a number of exciting tenants for either that building or the adjacent building right now.
And the space on Columbus that shares a building with Waco Work and Nexus Esports and Gaming, that was going to be restaurant, but it could potentially be retail or office?
Yeah, it opens up the possibilities again. There's been hundreds of thousands of dollars completed with a restaurant use in mind. So whether it be plumbing, HVAC, kitchen area. So it could certainly lend itself to another restaurant type use. But given the area and the upward trend over there, we could see other type of retail uses, even an office use over there. So
the former Minkna's building there on Franklin that Guess is moving into has a lot of benefits. There's great parking there. It's actually a little bit bigger than the space they had on Columbus. What was the thought process of the Guest team to move over to Franklin?
You know, I think timing was a big deal. There was still obviously a lot of construction left to do over at the Columbus space. And so this allowed them the opportunity to get in quicker. It's a second generation space, which is tough to find in the restaurant world. So it already has a kitchen, and the barrier to entry is a lot easier and a lot quicker. And so it turned out to be a good opportunity for them and a good situation for everybody involved.
And as you mentioned last month, the Edison at Castle Heights, the new housing lofts that are going to be coming there at 25th and Franklin, this is showing that the Franklin corridor is starting to perk up. But another street in town that is already very frothy is Hewitt Drive, where West Rock Center recently sold.
It did, yeah. We closed that shopping center last week, and West Rock Center has really filled out. If you go and drive up and down there, 3 years ago, there's four or five open pad sites available, and now there's no pad sites available. So we're seeing a lot of activity over there and a lot of strong interest up and down the Hewitt Drive corridor.
Take our listeners into the mind of the group that acquired this shopping center. So you have a center that has terrific tenants, 135 Prime, George's, like you mentioned. What is their thought process of purchasing something that's stabilized? Do they think they can improve it, get higher rents? Kind of give us an overview.
Yeah, that's a real broad question, but it's I think touches on a number of commercial real estate aspects. The ownership group that sold it actually bought the land and developed the center. And so they had seen it was their baby from inception all the way to sale. So it was exciting watching that process. And they just got a time in life and in their partnership where it was time to get rid of some assets, and that was one of them. And the new group sees a stabilized center with a lot of local, really well-operated restaurants in there. And so we like calling it an Amazon-proof style shopping center. It's got a lot of restaurants mixed throughout the center, and it's got a lot of medical and other service-oriented retailers in there. So it's a great opportunity, a good stabilized asset for the new owner. We're fortunate that it's a local ownership group that we're going to get to work with moving forward. We still have some vacant space in there, and they're going to get aggressive on maybe changing the appearance of the shopping center a little bit and getting good uses into the remaining space of that shopping center.
Greg Gleim bringing the heat here on Downtown Depot. Thank you so much for sharing your commercial real estate knowledge.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I'm now joined in studio by Austin Hooper for our monthly segment, The Residential Recap. There have been a couple of purchases this month by the royal couple of Waco, Chip and Joanna Gaines. They have acquired the Cottonland Castle on Austin Avenue and Fort House there on 4th Street. What are your impressions of Chip and Joe making these moves?
Yeah, very interesting, exciting. The Fort House thing came out of nowhere for me, for sure. on the castle, you know, I'm just excited. It's a long time coming, I guess. That house has been vacant for so long and has changed hands so many times of people thinking they want to take on this project and just for whatever, one reason or another aren't able to do it and really do the home justice. So I couldn't think of anyone that I would entrust more with taking on this project than Chip and Joe. Not only their, you know, acumen when it comes to renovating homes, but just a love for Waco and wanting to honor that home and the history that it represents. And I don't know that there's a more recognizable or iconic property in Waco, maybe short of the Alico building. But yeah, really excited. I can't wait to see what they do with it.
The Fort House is particularly interesting because it is so close to the Magnolia Silos. And director of the Historic Waco Foundation, Jill Barrow, who has been here on Downtown Depot before, was very clear in the interview that multiple restrictions have been put on this Fort House. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they aren't going to level it. They aren't going to just make a silo gift shop. It's going to be used for purposes of educating the people who come to visit Waco about what Waco is and the history that's inherent in this home. But with the castle, do you think that this sale affects sales prices in the area of Castle Heights? Or do you think that area is already so insulated and it is some of the highest rates per square foot in the city that this doesn't move the needle too much?
I don't think it's necessarily just that where the values currently sit in that neighborhood. It's just from a comp perspective, which is when you're talking about real estate values and getting appraisals done, that sort of thing, the castle is not going to be a good comp for anything else in that neighborhood. It's not your typical, you know, 3 or 4 bedroom home.
This is the outlier.
Yes. Yeah. So I would never expect to see the castle on any sort of appraisal being used as a comp, you know. So the castle, you know, becoming eventually this, you know, $1.5 million property. I don't know. It's not going to mean that everyone around there, their property values and their taxes all of a sudden shoot up. No worries there. I know I've heard from some friends that live nearby. They're already seeing the tourist traffic just kind of cruising by the castle, taking pictures, knowing now that, you know, it was in the headlines recently. So it will be interesting to see just from a traffic standpoint, hopefully not too much of an annoyance on the people that live right around there. But just like with fixer-upper houses, it's going to happen. So I guess I would tell folks to brace for that a little more drive-by traffic.
Well, and if you are someone who's looking in Castle Heights, maybe this isn't the good comp for the purchase, but as someone who's maybe listing a house in Castle Heights, this is some good seasoning. You know, here's a little sprinkle of fun. Chip and Joanna have a house right next to you. And once again, I talk about the positive increments. We have to have positive increments in our neighborhood. This is them taking a corner that was going to be defunct, and it's going to be beautiful.
Absolutely. It's going to be awesome. I would love to live near the castle. It's going to be a really cool property.
Austin Hooper with the residential recap this month on Downtown Depot. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you.
I'm now joined in studio by Annie Hepp. Annie is the Regional Interpretive Specialist for the State Parks Division for Texas Parks and Wildlife. Welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about your Waco history. What brought you here?
I moved to Waco about 2.5 years ago now. I actually moved from Vancouver, Canada. So if you hear a bit of a Canadian accent, that's why, although my Canadian friends would accuse me of having an American accent now. I actually moved here for this job. So I was looking for work. My husband is American. We were looking for work across the U.S. and I found this opportunity with Texas Parks and Wildlife. And thankfully, I was offered the position and we made the move down here.
Of course, I want to drill into Parks and Wildlife. That's the reason why you and I are connected in the first place. But I want to start off by hearing your impressions of Waco as a city, moving here 2.5 years ago, coming from a dense urban environment like Vancouver. So not just Canada to America, but Vancouver to Waco, there were some pretty big changes for you.
Yeah, definitely. And sometimes I have to remind myself that I actually live in America, the country, because Texas is so large and feels culturally like a country in and of itself. So it was definitely a big change moving from Canada to the United States. But again, like you said, also from Vancouver, which is a pretty large urban center. It's also very multicultural. And then to move to a relatively small town like Waco was a bit of a shock. We didn't necessarily love the big city in Vancouver because the cost of living there is so high. And so
it's like historically difficult to make money or, you know, historically difficult to live in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Because it is so expensive.
It is one of the most expensive cities in North America. And that was one of the factors for my husband and I looking for work elsewhere. Even though we love the recreation opportunities in Vancouver and the mild climate, the cost of living was just way too high. And so we were able to buy our home within the first year of moving to Waco, which was something that I never thought was possible when I lived in Vancouver. I never thought I'd even own a 600-square-foot condo, let alone a house, which is incredible. And it's really eased a lot of the financial pressures to move to a place that's so affordable. And it's been really cool in just the 2.5 years that we've been here, just seeing the growth and development. I will say that I was a little disappointed when I first moved to Waco, just with, you know, the lack of places to eat, especially the kind of like more ethnic varieties that I was used to in Vancouver.
Yeah. Vancouver being such a multicultural city,
yeah.
Moving here, fried foods and Budweiser and most of the restaurants you go to.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I did discover chicken fried meat products for the first time in my life. And I definitely enjoy me some chicken fried chicken and mashed potatoes. And white gravy was also another thing that I'd never had before. So, and discovering what real good Tex-Mex and Mexican food is all about. So trust me, I have eaten a lot in Waco and there are lots of really good things. But I do miss some of the other types of food that I was eating in Vancouver. But in just the 2.5 years that we've been here, we've definitely seen a lot of development and growth in Waco, and it seems like more people are moving into the city and the downtown is really becoming revitalized, which is a part that we missed a lot about Vancouver was the walkability of having a downtown neighborhood that you could walk around in. When we first moved here, it kind of seemed like Waco was lacking a bit of that.
2.5 years ago, there was no Indian food. Now there's Stone Hearth Cafe on Austin Avenue.
Yes, we love that place.
There was no Cambodian food. Now there's the Blazin' Asian there on University Park. So slowly but surely, that multiculturalism is starting to seep into Waco. And it's generated by the demand. There are people who are moving here and people who've been here for a long time who just say, we've had a lot of chicken fried steak. It's yummy. We want to try something else. So that's really good to put an actual person and a name with this colloquial idea of we need more diversity in our dining when you're hearing it on Downtown Depot. Someone from Vancouver comes here and says, hey, there's a way we can up our game. So I love that you've done that. But you did move here for the job with Texas Parks and Wildlife. What were you doing in Vancouver that prepared you for the role as a regional interpretive specialist?
Yeah, so I work in the field of interpretation, and when people hear interpretation, they often think about translating other languages. And it's not quite what the field of interpretation in the realm that I work in is all about. I really work on interpreting science and culture and history for people. That's what interpretation is all about, is helping to connect visitors to amazing natural and cultural resources in their world, and having that person to tell the stories of those resources to help make people care about them and understand why they should care about them. So I've been in the field of interpretation for almost 15 years now. I started off working at the Vancouver Aquarium. I wanted to work there ever since I was 3 years old and had seen a killer whale for the first time up
close.
World-class
aquarium.
Yeah.
And it's right located in Stanley Park, sort of similar to how the Cameron Park Zoo is in
exactly.
Cameron Park.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a moment that I, you know, really helped shape my path forward. And I didn't at the time know exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew ultimately working at the Vancouver Aquarium was a goal. And I got that opportunity, and I spent a couple of years working there doing interpretation. So I was the person talking at a variety of programs like killer whale shows and beluga whale shows, but also more intimate conversations with people in our various galleries. One with my favorite was about hissing cockroaches, and I was not a fan of hissing cockroaches, but I learned to love them and to share that love with other visitors. And I really found an enjoyment, especially sharing my passion for animals that sometimes don't get a lot of love for how they look, like turkey vultures, my favorite animal, but cockroaches and some of these other critters too. And having the opportunity to make these connections and see the aha kind of moment in people, and to really see them view an animal or a bit of information in a new light was just a really incredible feeling. And I knew that I wanted to pursue that more. So I had some other jobs in the field of interpretation. My last job before I moved to Texas was working at a bird of prey center. So I trained raptors for both work at industrial sites and commercial sites like Vancouver International Airport. If you fly into Vancouver, we have a falconry team that helps to push out unwanted species of birds like snow geese to keep the airspace clear. But we also train birds of prey for education as well. And I really enjoyed my time teaching people about raptors and their important role in the world and how we can impact them.
When you look back on the last 15 years, can you share with me a moment that you had with an animal that sticks out to you as something that was particularly special that made you think about that breed or that particular animal in a different way?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I can talk about where I am today without Judge Dredd. And Judge Dredd, not the character that you might be thinking of, but Judge Dredd is a turkey vulture. He's one of the very first birds that I worked with. And turkey vultures are incredibly intelligent, and they're also social, which is kind of unique. Raptors, when we think of raptors, are for the most part solitary, but turkey vultures and vultures that we have here are not actually raptors, but we kind of consider them birds of prey. But I digress. Turkey vultures are very intelligent, and working with intelligent animals is fascinating, but it's also very challenging. Think of working with a very intelligent dog. They're not like your Labrador retriever who's content to just do as you ask out of their pure and simple love for you. Turkey vultures are always thinking about what's in it for them and how they can achieve their own desires without doing what you want. And when they have sharp beaks that are designed for ripping and tearing into dead carcasses, one of the ways that they communicate is using those beaks on one another. But when you don't have a thick layer of feathers protecting your skin, these bites can be a little painful. So Judge Dredd and I got off to a rocky start to begin with, and I don't think it would be an exaggeration to say that I hated this bird, but we worked our way through it, and I really learned to appreciate him, to appreciate the challenge that was there. And through that, I really began to fall in love with turkey vultures, and it kind of is like the cockroach. This is an animal that people generally look at in a less than, you know, desirable light. They are kind of gross. They eat dead things. And they have a bald head, but they are
I eat dead things. I have a bald head. What's wrong with me?
Do you poop down your legs though?
I don't poop down my legs.
Okay. Well, 2 out of 3 is not bad. You're almost, you're 2/3 on your way to being a cool turkey vulture. But these guys, they're just so important to the ecosystem. And when we're looking at places like Africa and Asia, where we're seeing declines of vulture populations there on a massive scale, we're seeing really real time catastrophic health impacts of not just wildlife and cattle, but also for humans as well. And so being able to share my love and passion for turkey vultures with people, and all of that stemmed from starting work with Judge Dredd. And like I said, it did not start off well. It was not a typical love story. It was not love at first sight or first bite, but it grew from there. And I've really enjoyed advocating for turkey vultures ever since then.
There's an excellent radio show called Radiolab, which you can hear on NPR. And I remember an episode a few years ago that was discussing a zoo in Omaha, Nebraska in the 70s. And the monkeys kept on getting out of the monkey pit somehow. And what it turned out was happening was that there was one, they believe they were chimpanzees, there was one chimpanzee who someone had thrown a paperclip into the monkey pit. And this chimpanzee not only had the intelligence to wait until the zookeepers left and use the paperclip to pick the lock, but he also knew that this paperclip was something that the zookeepers will take from me. So the chimpanzee would hide the paperclip underneath his lip, and they only found it out because they were walking hand in hand with this chimpanzee who had gotten out of the pit and then saw a little glint from the sun and then pulled down his lip and realized that this guy had been hiding, had been deceiving for months the people whose entire lives were to study him and train him.
Yeah.
So that was an incredible story for me to just realize even the things that we think we know about our animal brethren is only a fraction of what's actually going on in there.
Oh, yeah. They're incredible. Anyone, I think, who works with animals or just enjoys learning about animals, you're always confronted with experiences that challenge what you think you know and understand about animals. And I just don't think we'll ever get to a point where we really do. Maybe one day. I'd love to know what my dogs are thinking, but not yet.
In Waco, we have 3 Texas state parks that are all less than an hour driving distance away from us. Meridian State Park, Mother Neff State Park, and Fort Parker. Talk to me a little bit about each one of those parks and what are the unique things that Wacoans and other people living in Central Texas can enjoy there?
Yeah, we are really lucky in Waco that we have 3 incredible parks within an hour's drive, and each park is very diverse. If we start with Meridian State Park, we kind of call that park the gem at the top of the hill country because the ecosystem there is just at the very northern edge of the hill country, and so you get a lot of those rocky escarpments. There are lots of recreational opportunities for people to enjoy. There are some beautiful hiking trails there. There's a lake that you can catch fish in that's regularly stocked. You can also rent kayaks and canoes and paddle boards there. And it also is home to the endangered golden cheek warbler. So it's one of the few public places in Texas where you can go and listen and look for an endangered species.
People travel from all over for birding at Meridian State Park.
Yeah, it's an incredible spot. And again, given its unique location, kind of at the convergence of a couple different ecosystems, you get a rich diversity of not just bird species, but wildlife in general. And so there's plenty to see and do there, and the staff are incredibly kind and are always willing to give people some tips and advice for how to enjoy. And, of course, that park is built by the Civilian Conservation Corps, so there's a beautiful stone refectory or stone building where you can enjoy a picnic in the shade while you're there.
A little piece of history. Meridian State Park is actually the smallest state park in the state park system, but it is beautiful. And, yeah, it's located in a situation that not a ton of people just happen to be passing right through on Highway 6 there. So if you're looking for a more relaxed environment, it's really an excellent park there. Fort Parker.
Fort Parker State Park is located just really close to Mejia. So it's not, again, it's not too far away. And it's quite a different landscape than Meridian. It is really characterized by some larger hardwood trees. They have a large lake there. This park was also built by the Civilian Conservation Corps, but a little bit different histories than some of our other parks, because this Civilian Conservation Corps group was made up of African Americans. And so there's a lot of rich history that goes on at the park, but it's also talking visitors through a time where segregation was still prevalent and how these this U.S. Corps of African American men built the state park, and an incredible feat of engineering, one of the most incredible engineered dams in the Civilian Conservation Corps system is found at Fort Parker State Park. And so they built this very large earthen and concrete dam that now creates the lake that you can enjoy there today. And again, they have miles of beautiful hiking trails that wind through the trees and along the lake. The lake is home to lots of migratory birds, so you can see pelicans and bald eagles, but also herons and wood ducks. Just a astounding variety of different wildlife and birds to see.
Mother Neff State Park in Moody, just a bit south of us here in Waco, is another one of these areas that seems to be bringing a bunch of different ecosystems. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that park is really, it has four different plant vegetation systems there. And so at the top of the park, you get remnants of grassland prairie habitat. And the park has been working really hard to restore that habitat to its native glory, which in Texas, we have a lot of habitat that has been degraded from ranching and farming practices over the year. And it takes time and effort to really bring back that landscape. And so the park is committed to that. So you can see the prairies up top. They're beautiful when the wildflowers are blooming and we get lots of Texas pollinators. And then we also have rocky ridges that go down closer to the Leon River. And so you get some cool shade from the ash and juniper and through there. They also are home to the golden cheek warbler. So you can watch and listen for that species. And then when you get to the bottom, there are some hardwoods, some pecans, but the Leon River has flooded quite significantly in the past couple of years and has caused significant damage to the bottom portion of the park. So unfortunately, that area is closed to the public at the moment until we can get in there with some crews and do some much-needed restoration to the bottom half of the park.
You and I met a couple years ago when I was volunteering with Texas Parks and Wildlife as part of the Ambassadors Program. I was the ambassador at Meridian State Park. So if you want to know more about Meridian, talk to me. I'm your man. But we've also gotten to know each other on a personal level. I was able to take care of your two Harris Hawks this summer when you were traveling, and I really enjoyed getting that little piece of nature. But if you are someone who lives in Waco area and you maybe don't have the time to really go volunteer with Texas Parks and Wildlife, give me a minute on what we have here in Waco, just in our backyard, and ways that people can get involved in nature.
Yeah, I mean, Cameron Park, when I first moved to Waco, was a place that we visited, and I could not believe that within the city limits was a park that was so large and beautiful. It is kind of like Stanley Park, for those of you who are familiar with Vancouver. So it has lots of amazing hiking trails. I go there regularly, and I still haven't explored all of the trails. And along those trails, you're likely to see and hear a variety of different birds. So that is an excellent and free way to enjoy Waco. I haven't yet taken the opportunity to enjoy any of the paddle boards or kayaking, but getting out in the water, especially before it gets too hot, also looks like a great way to get outdoors and explore Waco from the water level, which is a pretty cool way to see the city.
Annie Hepp with Texas Parks and Wildlife urging all of us to opt outside and enjoy this beautiful ecosystem that we have here in Central Texas. Annie, thank you so much for telling us a little bit about your story.
Thank you so much, Austin.
Thanks again to my guest, Annie Hepp, Carol Ferguson from Startup Waco, Greg Gleim, Austin Hooper, and you for tuning in. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and join me back here on KWBU in 2 weeks for another episode of Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.